PFT Media. You are now listening to Cinema Crespediso.
We spend all our time here. I want to make a paradise.
She redid all of it.
Every last detail.
And she breathed life back into every room.
Are you happy?
I love you. Please, come in.
Hello.
Hello.
He's a stranger. We're just gonna let him sleep in our house.
Hello.
Hello.
Did you know he had a wife? He has pictures of you in his luggage.
What were you doing in their luggage?
What do they want?
God help you.
They've come here to see me.
Come quick! You're insane! You're insane!
All I'm trying to do is bring life into this house. Open the door to new people, new ideas.
I'm so sorry.
Get out of my house! Get out!
You give and you give and you give.
It's just never enough.
No!
Welcome to a spoiler bonus episode. Spoiler bonus episode. I don't know why I was doing that like a ghost of Cinema Crespediso. I'm Rose Chris Crespo. I got with Juicy Cogburn, Drew. How's it going, dude? Ready to talk about this, Mother?
Yo, I'm fucking ready, bro.
All right, so about Mother, all the spoilers are happening. So if you don't want to know what's going on in the movie, stop listening now. Watch the movie first and then come back. If you already have seen the movie and you know or you don't care, we're about to talk about all of it. And it's a weird movie.
Oh, it's wacky.
So it's going to take some descriptin.
Yeah, well, yeah.
Some descriptins.
Yeah, well, some descriptins and some explainins.
Some explainins to do.
Yeah, we got some explainins to do, Chris.
Because it starts very weirdly with a burning woman.
Well, yeah.
The very first image you see is a burning woman.
Yeah, exactly. It's Jennifer Lawrence's face on fire.
No, it's not her.
It's not her?
No, it's not her. That was some other woman.
So, the woman before... And the woman after.
Mm-hmm.
I have a feeling that they used Jennifer Lawrence and then messed it up to make it look like somebody. Because it all.
I don't think so. I think they just got three white ladies that look the same.
You see, I think the lady. I think the first lady was CG, and I think the last lady was CG.
To the IMDb! I mean, obviously there's CG involved because the woman's not actually on fire.
Well, yeah,
so
there was
digital trickery going on.
There is some digital, but very little. Until you get to the end.
Well, there are bits and bobs here of digitalness.
Well, yeah.
For example, there's they keep showing... you see the burning woman, and then Javier Bardem puts that rock with the fire veins in there in the pedestal,
mm-hmm.
and then the house around it starts restoring itself.
Correct.
And then Jennifer Lawrence throughout the movie, when she like starts feeling sick or whatever, then she looks down, the world, she sees like the burnt what it was.
Yes, it coming back.
Yes, the burn is coming back and then fading away, coming back. Yeah. So there's little bits of CG here and there.
Yeah, yeah.
But for the first, what, hour of the movie, it's just...
For the most part, yeah.
Just people in a house talking and being weird.
It's really odd. The first word of the entire movie is baby?
Baby?
With
a question mark?
Yeah, so it automatically... I don't know. It kind of sets everything up.
Right. It's an important word, baby. It's a birth or something.
Yeah. Exactly, Chris. Exactly.
I'm like, I'm a baby. So she wakes up, and then we find out that she's the young wife of a poet who has writer's block and is struggling to make his next piece of art. And there is a weird, you know, like distance between them. It's really him. He's being standoffish, and she doesn't know what's going on.
Yeah, she doesn't know why he's being standoffish. Right. I mean, obviously it's something that's been going on for a while because she's gotten used to it.
Yeah.
And, you know, has gone on to do whatever the fuck that she's doing while she's in the house.
She continues fixing up the house.
Exactly. With you know, without him.
Which includes when she's finding a color for the wall. She puts on one color of the wall. She looks at it. She's like, I don't know what this. And then she touches the wall.
Uh-huh.
And she senses... like its heartbeat of the house.
Yeah.
And then she steps back.
Well, yeah.
And then she picks the color.
Yeah. At that point in time, it does like one of those like fountainy type things where like all of a sudden, like she touches and like she feels and the like, house.
And it fades into the wall.
And it fades into the wall. Yeah. And she fades into the wall. And it's almost like her and the house are almost one.
They're connected. Yeah.
We don't know exactly how in the beginning.
Right.
But we know that there is a definite connection because every time it goes into the heart, you know, the heartbeat of the house, sometimes it's good. When things are good, the heartbeat is strong.
It's strong in the beginning and it's getting weaker throughout. Yes. It's constricting. The heart's constricting and it's turning into
black.
Ooh, that's not good. Black heart. But she listens to the house and we see the heartbeat. We're like, what the fuck is going on? And then she picks a different color and she's like, yep, that's the color. And then that night, Ed Harris shows up, a doctor, saying that he thought the place was a bed and breakfast. But it turns out later that he's really a crazed fan of the poet.
All right, so.
And he sought him out.
So the first, you're right, three different white ladies.
Okay.
Well, I'm assuming three different. At least two different, because we have one person is listed as foremother. So, in Jennifer Lawrence's mother.
Right.
But there, I don't see...
So, there's probably a post-mother?
I don't see...
New mother?
So anything like that, though. Even though there obviously is once you've seen the movie.
Mm. Yeah. Okay, so Ed Harris shows up, and he's like, I'm dying. And,
not just just some random man. A man shows up.
Well, he's a doctor. Says he's a doctor. Says that he was told it was a bed and breakfast, and he was told incorrectly, and then we find out later that he's the crazed fan.
Yeah.
And I mean, it all tracks. It's all logical stuff. It's weird how it's presented. And the whole movie, we're with the mother character. We're with mother.
Yes.
And the camera's on her the whole time. It's either following her, it's next to her, it's in front of her. But
it's all her point of view. All how she feels, how she's viewing everything.
So then that's an extension of to the audience, and it's our confusion as to what's going on. So it's a weird thing, and her husband acts weird when he's like so inviting of these people, but she just goes with it, and she gets the bed linen and all that stuff. And then we get that weird thing where she drops the teacup.
Yeah.
And it shatters, and like, she hears the tone of the cup, and those tones seem to be what's setting her off, making her feel like terrible all of a sudden.
Yeah, all of a sudden she starts getting like fuzzy vision almost.
Yeah, that's when she starts
like
seeing
you said,
through.
She starts, she starts seeing the house go back to that.
The burnt state. Yeah.
And she freaks out every time this happens. She goes into the bathroom. She shuts the door.
Mm-hmm.
She's got a vial of something yellow.
Okay.
Whatever the yellow stuff is.
And it's obviously like an old medicine bottle with the label purposefully like
messed
so
up.
Deteriorated that he can't see what
exactly.
it is.
Exactly. And she throws... But first, the thing is, first, like you said, when she's doing when she feels the heartbeat.
Yeah.
And then changes the color.
Yeah.
She also uses the same yellow powder.
It's the same color, so it's the same powder?
It's the same bottle that she puts into the paint. And then now that she's putting into her water and drinking.
I missed that part.
That's what really made me... I was like, what is this what is that shit? Stuff?
And then when it hits the water, it like it glows. There's like light in there for a second. Very fountainy looking.
It does the fountain thing.
Yep. And then it just serves
only in a tiny little cup of water.
In a tiny little cup of water. And then it dissolves. And then it just looks like a lemon-lime Gatorade.
Yeah. And then she just drinks it. And, you know, and then she feels better. And then she can go on with whatever else is going on. She
goes back on with whatever. So weird. And another weird thing that happens is when... So it's probably easier to describe the movie if we say it up front what it's about.
Okay, so... Actually, I think it'd be easier if we go through the story see it, and then explain the allegory.
Well, just because there's a thing I want to bring up right away. When Ed Harris...
Yes.
Mother wakes up. She's like, how come my husband hasn't come to bed yet? She goes downstairs to find him, and he's in the bathroom. He's throwing up, and the poet's trying to make sure he's okay. Yeah. And with his hand, he covers up a wound on his back.
Yes. That big one right there.
That big one. Uh-huh. Right?
Yes.
And then the next morning, his wife shows up.
Yeah, well, I mean, okay, so yeah. So the entire thing is an allegory for pretty much the Bible.
For creation.
Creation, Genesis through Revelation.
It's the whole thing.
It hits all the marks pretty dead on.
It's the existence of mankind, humankind through...
Let there be light, and there was, a creator. And it was good.
And there was all this stuff, so that's the rib.
Yeah, no, exactly. He was losing his ribs, so his wife, Adam... Lost his rib.
Lost that rib.
So
got his wife.
Exactly.
Eve shows up.
Eve's kind of a cunt.
She's lacking social graces.
Yeah.
That's one way to put it. Yeah, she's very invasive. She's asked very invasive questions. And she's a very annoying person.
And she has
Adam isn't that great either because he's like, you know, smoking inside anyway. Right. And
well, I mean, he's
making weird comments to...
He's human, man. Somehow they got to get thrown out of paradise.
Mm. She explicitly says, I want to make a paradise.
Yeah.
They call it paradise straight up in the beginning of the movie. And so she shows up the next day. So in the first 20-30 minutes of the movie is... This older couple now in the house, and mother's like, who are these people? Why are they being so weird? How come my husband's being weird? And
her husband is just like, these people are awesome. They're great to be around.
He's like, I'm glad they're here.
I want them to be here. You know what? Fuck it. They can stay for as long as they want.
Yeah, he's like, you guys can stay. She's like, why would you do that? I didn't think it was be a big deal. So they're definitely in different mentalities and mind headspaces when it comes to how to deal with these visitors. He's very welcoming of them, and she's like, they can go.
Well, yeah, I mean, he created them, so God has always loved man.
That, but why? Know. Why did he create them in his own image? Why did he create them to love him and adore him? I think that's what's being posited in this movie.
Pretty much
that it's a selfish guy.
Well, because at a certain point in time, you know, I mean. Much further on down the movie, but you know, she says, "Why don't you know why? Why won't you tell them to leave?"
Yeah, make them
and
leave.
And he straight up finally is like, "I want them to be here. I don't want them here. Yeah. I don't want them to go. Mm-hmm. This is what I'm about. This is what I want. I want their love. I want their adoration.
These are my followers.
These are my followers. This is about me. This is what I'm here for."
But the problem is it's all happening within the confines of the house.
Yes.
Which is, as we figure, is also connected to her. Uh-huh. She's the one making it good and nice and livable. And
they're all just fucking it up.
Yes, they're all fucking up. And he invites them in. And she's like, well, goddamn it. So the first 30 minutes of the movie is the character drama setting that up. Yeah. And then Cain and Abel show up.
Exactly. Cain and Abel, Domhnall and Brian.
I think Brian.
Brian and Domhnall Gleeson. All of a sudden, seriously, when I saw Domhnall, I was just like, you motherfucker. How do you get into these movies?
Because he's good.
He is.
And he's got good representation. He does. You gotta have those good reps.
Yeah.
We'll be seeing them again in American Made in a couple weeks.
Looking forward to it.
He shows up yelling about trust funds and wills and stuff, getting into an argument with their parents. Leads to a crazy scuffle.
Fight with his brother, and go figure what happened. Cain kills Abel.
He grabs a broken doorknob and smashes his head in. And so then the blood soaks into the wood.
Uh huh.
And later, Mulder tries to clean it up.
But
there's a little bit right around that knot that won't go away.
And it almost seems like... It almost seems like the blood soaked into the wood and created some sort of like festering wound in the house.
In the actual house itself, right? Yeah. That never healed.
It never heals.
They replaced the wood, they tried covering it up, and it soaks through.
No matter what. At one point in time, she even sees a drop on the thing again after they've already redone the house and redone the floor and redone everything, and she lifts it up. And it's brand new wood underneath there, but there's still blood stains soaking through the carpet.
And then later, when she takes the carpet off, then it's all fucked up again. And
we'll get to that later.
And then, it's like, obviously, then it's the Cain and Abel murder. It's the first mortal sin.
The first mortal sin, yeah.
So then it left that permanent mark,
that stain on humanity and the earth as a whole, in all reality. Ever since then, according to the Judeo-Christian tradition, ever since then, man has been fighting himself.
Brother and brother.
Brother against brother for basically, since the dawn of time.
I mean, what does that say about mankind if it's the very first brothers and then they're fighting? Like, you're the first two.
Yeah.
And you're already fighting?
Yeah. Well, mankind sucks. It's because we're fucking animals, Chris. It's
a bunch of garbage. By that I mean humanity. Mm-hmm. That first sin happens, the first sin, right? And then the brothers leave, and, Okay, but then, so then you got the death.
Well, no, exactly. Well, he's hurting very bad. Javier Bardem picks him up, takes him and the wife and the father.
They all leave.
And they all leave, and Jennifer Lawrence is like, why are you fucking leaving me in this place alone? There's some crazy asshole who just killed his brother.
And he's out there somewhere.
And you're just going to leave me here.
And then he comes back in a great scene.
Yeah.
Right?
Where does.
He's like, they left you here. Like, what a bunch of bullshit.
Yeah.
And then, and you think like, oh man, this guy's menacing. And then he's just getting his wallet.
But no, yeah. He picks up his wallet off the ground and he leaves. They're shitty. You understand, right?
Yeah.
Yeah, you do.
That happens
a
lot.
And he can tell by the look on her face. He's like, you understand. He gets his wallet, he just walks away.
And that happens a bunch in the movie where people are talking to Mother and they're like, they're all acting like they know something bigger that she doesn't.
Yeah.
The way they're like, oh yeah, your room or your house or like whatever. Uh-huh. And he leaves, everyone else comes back and she's like, you abandoned me, what the F? They go to bed, waking up in the middle of the night when everyone's coming back. Already dressed all in black, like this is where we're gonna have our post funeral get together celebration.
We're gonna have the wake here,
the wake, whatever you want to call it, right? And
she's like, okay, so there's gonna be you two, maybe a couple extended family. So we're talking like 5-6 people.
Yeah,
not a problem.
Within
I can totally deal with 5 or 6 people
within 10 minutes. Within 10 minutes,
there's like 50 people there.
No, the house is overrun with people, and they're all acting so weird.
Yeah,
they're acting weird.
That one dude just shows up and is like, hey, what's up? How's it going? So you want to go bang?
Yeah, he's like, you want to go take a walk with me? And she's like, no, I don't even know you. He's like, yeah, I can do. You don't know what I can do for you. I don't want you to do anything for me. And then he's like, you know what? You're an arrogant bitch or whatever.
I'm pretty sure he called her an arrogant cunt.
You're an arrogant cunt, and walks off. And you're just like, what the
fuck? No, exactly. You're like, what just happened there?
But that is legit how it happens.
Yeah, no, exactly.
It's a real bummer.
Yeah.
It's really sad.
Yeah, it is.
That black dude who was like, it seemed like he was trying to hit on her, but then they go up to her bedroom, and he's trying to make out the Asian chick, and she's like, get out of here. And she's like, hey, give me a minute. And she's like, get out of here.
Yeah.
You know what's wrong with you? Like, none of these people have any social graces whatsoever.
No, well, it almost seems like they walk into the place as if they've been told, like, this is your house. You can do whatever the fuck you want. And Mother's like, excuse me?
Like, no one cleared that with me.
No, this is my house.
Yeah, no one cleared that with me whatsoever. And then at one point, they're painting the ceilings and the walls and everything. And all that was so crazy. Why are they doing this?
Well, they're just trying to make some improvements, man.
I guess so, but that one girl, she was painting directly on the exposed brick.
Well, dude, it's all an allegory for humanity and what we're doing to the earth. Yeah, so, we're painting on exposed brick and we're fucking all sorts of shit up.
We're not doing it right.
We're just trying to help.
We're not doing it right. We're fucking it up. And then we're being told not to do things, and we do them anyway, and we're like, oh, it's fine. The people that kept sitting on the unbraced sink.
And then the sink breaks.
And the pipe bursts. Comes out of the wall, and it's a huge mess, and finally Mother freaks out. That was everyone to get out, and they finally do. man, the scene that happens next was, for a second, I was like, ugh. So, kicks everyone out, and she's like, what the fuck, what's wrong with you? And he's like, what? And they have their big fight where he's like, I just wanted to bring, you know, new people, new ideas.
And he's like, you talk about children, you won't even fuck me. You won't
fuck me. I'm like, and everyone's like, oh.
Oh, snap. Oh,
damn, Javier.
Fatality. And, and she goes to go upstairs, and then he forces himself on her. And
but
then,
she totally goes for
yeah,
it.
Yeah, that's the thing. At first, I'm like, oh, shit, marital rape, not cool.
Yeah.
Like, spousal rape is a real problem. And then she's, like, turns pretty quickly, and then she's into it, which itself is problematic, depicting something like that. But then also it's established that she is, like, very deprived of... of love from this guy.
Yeah.
So, yes, I'm sure she would then be happy to find it. It came out of anger. You know, it's life and sex is weird.
It is.
So they have sex. Wakes up the next morning.
Boom. She's like, I am pregnant.
Which is hysterical.
He looks at her like, fucking excuse
me?
Yeah,
at first he's like, what? And she's like, I'm pregnant. And he's like, oh, okay. This is great.
Yeah.
Fantastic. And then sure enough.
Jesus is born.
Well, I mean, I was going to say, sure enough, she's pregnant.
Yeah.
That takes a while to get there, to get to the Jesus.
Not really.
Yeah, it still does.
It's actually pretty quick.
I mean, no, because we still have... First, it gets to... She's, looks like maybe 5-6 months along.
Mm-hmm.
And that's when she first sees the blood coming back up through the rug.
Yeah.
Right?
When she's because the room, it was a guest room.
Right.
And the room where Cain killed Abel was also the room that got turned into the baby's bedroom.
Got into the nursery.
Yeah.
And because of her pregnancy and the whole that night of the wake, the poet was inspired to write.
Yes.
And he essentially, I have a feeling he just wrote down what his kind of eulogy was.
Dude, he wrote the fucking Bible.
No, but I mean literally.
Yeah.
Literally in the movie he wrote his eulogy. He gave a eulogy, and then later they're quoting his poem, and it's just his eulogy from earlier. It's like, yes. All he did was write down what he said.
Yeah, but it was all pretty.
Well, yeah, I'm a poet. You're soy un poet. And, when does... Okay, so
well, no,
it's in the middle part where she peeps into the office. He's working away. Yeah. There's stuff all over the wall, so he is full on working. She sees the blood. She's like, "What's up with this fucking blood?" And then we skip the whole thing too, where like the festering wound caused the blood to go downstairs, and she finds
the tub of oil,
the portal to hell.
I mean, I'm not sure if it's a portal to hell so much. I mean,
it was closed off, and she opened it.
Yes. Correct. It was closed off, and she opened it.
The blood led her to it.
But at the same time...
The blood formed the outline of the door.
And then... But it obviously didn't create the doorway.
But it... No, it didn't...
But it unlocked it.
It unlocked it.
Yes.
It showed the way. It showed the way to the underworld. And yes, the oil is down there that the house is running on, that the world runs on, which is destroying us, which she doesn't later use. So... and then there's a frog. What was up with the frog?
I don't get the frog.
Because earlier when she's looking at the wall, there is a ribbit sound, and then later when she pops it open, the frog comes down. She's like, "Oh!" And then she looks, and the frog is gone. Later,
I don't know what the significance of the frog is.
What's the significance of the frog? And so she's going back. She's seeing that the blood is soaking through the carpet, although it hasn't soaked through the floor just yet. And then that's when it turns out that the poet has finished this poem, which is the Bible.
Yes.
Is it the Bible or is it the New Testament?
In all reality, I think
it's the New Testament, maybe. Even, yeah. Maybe.
Well, no.
Jesus wasn't born yet.
Well, no, because the from the Judeo-Christian tradition, the only thing that is the actual word of God is the Old Testament.
Judeo-Christian.
Yes.
Not, I'm sorry, Judeo.
Yes.
Judaic. Well, not Christian. And which is something I wanted to bring up, actually. Aronofsky is Jewish. So
it's all the same tradition.
No, because...
The Jews just don't believe Jesus was the Messiah.
So then it's not all the same tradition, because once you get to a certain point, the Christians take over.
The Old Testament is the Torah.
No, that's incorrect. The Torah is the first five books. Genesis, Exodus, Leviticus, Numbers, Deuteronomy. That's the Torah. The rest of the Bible is the Bible. The New Testament is part of the Christian Bible.
Yes.
The Jewish people are like, that's not the Bible.
That's garbage.
So that's where the tradition changes.
Yeah.
Aronofsky is Jewish. This is evident in Noah. I think this is a, I don't know the exact difference, it's a Talmudic god. And he is all-knowing, all-seeing, and he will send floods, and he will turn cities to salt, mm-hmm. he will burn them, turn people to salt, he'll do what he has to do. But I also think that's a god, and I guess it's the same with the Christian god, who is, the Christian god is seen as more, it's this fucking stupid contradiction of you have free will, but he also put everything into place. It makes no sense. That's stupid. I think the Talmudic god is more of the watchmaker.
But there's the whole...
He winds up the universe, he winds up the watch, and then he sets it, and then things go. And then if he has to change things, he will.
Mm-hmm.
I think so. I don't know.
By the way, in the Christian tradition, there's the Old Testament... There are two distinct gods. There's the Old Testament god that is fucking hellfire and brimstone.
Yeah.
And then there's New Testament god who's,
he's a little cooler, and this poet doesn't change. So I think it's Talmudic, and it's just pointing towards the idea of a prophecy. And sure, it's Jesus Christ, et cetera, et cetera. But, I mean, that the idea of the prophet being killed by his people, being rejected by his own hometown, that's been going since pre-Christian. That's pre-Christian. It's repeated in Isaiah specifically, in the book of Isaiah. So there's definitely Judaic things. You could ignore the New Testament and all the Christian stuff, and this movie would still make the same amount of sense.
Yes.
I feel like I gotta... That's the thing. On a movie like this, you could really go down some rabbit holes if you need to. I mean, if just going from we're only looking at a religious perspective. When you get to when the shit really hits the fan, I feel like there are other things being thrown in there.
There's all sorts. I mean, there is, you know, there is riots, there is protests, there are political statements in that whole end scene.
Yeah.
You know, there's the stuff with the quote-unquote publisher.
The publisher.
I'm trying to put a finger on... just exactly what she represents.
You want to know? Pull up IMDb and start looking at... you probably haven't done this. I did. It's very interesting. Go to IMDb and look at character names. Mother's name is Mother. The poet's name is him. Ed Harris is man. Michelle Pfeiffer is woman.
Brian Gleason, younger brother, oldest son... Yovan Adepo is the cupbearer.
Just say the character names.
Cupbearer, damsel, consoler, bumbler, philanderer, fool, wanderer, idler, whisperer, adulterer, zealot, defiler, pisser, lingerer, loiterer, aesthete, epicure, drunkard, devotee, herald, abitor, thief, plunderer, pilferer, neophyte, novitiate, initiate, supplicant, hewer, coppersmith, Good Samaritan, fornicator, deputy, whoremonger, slave driver, executioner, soldier, penitent, healer, devourer, maiden, foremother, refugee, sex slave, protester, underling, refugee, paparazzi, dead body, looter, fan, rave dancer, fan.
So what's Kristen Wiig? That'll tell you right there what she's supposed to be. Because fortunately, Darren Aronofsky labeled it.
There we go. She's the herald. Makes sense.
Your computer.
She is bringing his news.
She's the herald. She trumpets the news out there. She helped get the word out. Mm-hmm. Stephen McHattie is the zealot.
Yes, he is.
The original Night Owl.
Yes.
He's the zealot. He's the one who ended up with the tattoo of the mark on the head by the end.
And he was the one putting the ash mark on everybody else's face in the middle of that weird
wildness. So in the middle, he finishes his poem, which is the Bible. Mm-hmm. And she's like, I'm afraid I'm going to lose you. And
it's
he's
the
like,
word of God.
Not.
Whether it is. Whether it's the Bible or the inspirational words of God is
a great way to put it. And... then jump cut to she is now like 9 months and
full
25
on.
Days ready. Like this is the
day. She's ready to pop.
She's got her bug out bag in her bathroom ready to go. You know, she's ready to go give birth to this baby. And they're celebrating every copy of the poem being sold on the first day it's available. And then people start showing up led by Stephen McHattie.
Yeah.
And they're just fans.
And they're just like, hey, what's up? How's it going?
They just want to
meet. Just a few people.
They want to meet him. Yeah. They want to ask some questions. And then more people just keep showing up.
Yeah.
And then more people keep showing up.
And then all of a sudden, a lady has to use the bathroom.
With her kid.
And mother's like, you know what? I don't want anybody in my house, but your kid...
Your kid's peeing on the floor.
Peeing on the floor.
We gotta take care of this.
That's fine. I get it. It's a kid peeing on the floor. Let's go take care of this. Yep. They go upstairs. And by the time they get to the bathroom, there is already not only somebody in the bathroom already,
yeah.
but a line of people waiting to get through the other door of the bathroom.
And then she starts walking around the house and there's more and more people. Mm-hmm. She's like, what are you doing here? And the poet said we could do, we could be here, we could be that. And then they set up an impromptu signing session in the dining room. So now he's leading people in. Stephen McHattie, he grabs keys. He's leading other people into the kitchen. He's like, there's food, grab drinks, do this, do that.
And that's when she decides, fucking enough. Mother, she grabs her, she tries to leave.
She does try to leave at that point. Yeah, but she can't because there's too many people.
Well, no, exactly. And then as she's trying to leave, then it all starts to kind of hit the fan.
It's
with the... Just the sheer number of people in the house starts to make everything difficult.
Well, it starts with a theft.
Yes.
It starts with that woman taking the pen and the book. She tries to chase her down, and she also grabs a vase. The vase breaks. Other people grab the shards. Like, I got it now. And she's like, now I got to steal something else. Like, very upfront about what she's doing.
Yes.
Mother grabs a phone, calls 911. These people are taking everything. Someone hangs up the phone on her,
and then
and it's like, "Don't worry, don't worry about it. I'm gonna make a phone call." And then someone else steals the phone,
literally yanks the phone out of their head and runs away
and takes the phone. And they're just like, "What?" And Mother's like, "God damn it!" And at one point, that Native American dude is like ripping the paneling off the wall, and she's like, "Why are you doing this?" And he just says, "Proof that we were here.
Yep,
we're leaving our mark. We want people to know we were here." But you're destroying the place in the process. What's the point of destroying the place? Just that proof that you were there. And it gets to the point where, it goes from them rummaging and going through the fridge and looking for food
to literally like ripping the fridge out of the wall, taking the sink out of the wall,
ripping down the cabinets. Turning over tables.
Breaking down walls just to get pieces of plaster.
And she's going around from room to room, like, trying to figure out what's going on, what to do. More and more people show up. People that are outside, that are fans, quote fans, they finally, like, break in through doors, so it really becomes overrun. And then, I mean, God, when the cops show up, when the cops bust in, that's when it's like, what? Yeah. No, first there was a party going on. There was a rave.
Yeah. Exactly. All of a sudden, one part, because she's panning around. We're following her.
Yeah.
So we're going from one room to another room.
And it's disorienting going around this house.
It is. And things are escalating in every room, too.
Every time you turn around, there's more going on. There are more
people and other things going on. By the time she gets back downstairs, yes, you're right. In the living room, there is a fucking full-on rave.
A very debaucherous dance party with club music. And
naked people.
She sees Bardem where he's got the ink on his thumb, and that's where the marking comes from. He accidentally puts a thumbprint on someone. It's like, oh, you've been marked. Do me, you know. Yeah. It's very, very laughable how it all of a sudden becomes such an obvious. That's right around. It becomes such an obvious allegory. Like, oh, this is what's going on. It's a religious thing. This is wild. But then there's also like, so the police show up and like they're pushing everyone around. She's the one innocent person, and like a cop immediately goes for her. And she's like, the baby. And then the poet shows up and he's like, leave my wife alone. He gets pepper sprayed, which then residual spray gets her.
On her.
It's like, man, this is that typical like overzealous police response that we're seeing all the time. It's being criticized. Like, now that's being thrown in there. So you got the toxic masculinity, you got the police, you got the political statements via religion, and then the actual religion thing stuff. And environmentalism going on. It's like the big thing is the environmentalism.
Well, it's because, I mean, it's Mother Earth, bro.
It's Mother Earth. Mother. That's, mother. That's our mother.
It's our mother.
Earth.
Yeah.
It's our mother, and we're ruining her. She gives and gives and gives, and we take. It's the giving tree all over again. Very sad story.
It is.
Man, when she goes into that one room and it's just like a wall of riot cops and then a wall of rioters and then someone throws a Molotov cocktail.
Well, because at one point you're right. But before that starts, there are like, it seems like the protesters or like the masses, like all of a sudden there's a group upstairs that starts marching downstairs. Somebody like from the outside that start like a whole group starts marching in,
probably like opposing ideologies of the poem.
And people from the rave party all of a sudden all form a line and all get behind one person. All of a sudden, there's these fucking three factions.
Yeah,
I have a feeling it's probably Judaism, Christianity, and Islam.
Islam, that makes sense, right? That makes perfect sense. It's different interpretations of the same text causing such chaos,
exactly.
Insane chaos.
Yeah,
and riots and then the military shows up and automatic gunfire from the outside just wiping people out.
Yeah, it almost felt like Children of Men all of a sudden.
Yes, especially then she walks into another room and then it's like a refugee camp.
No, exactly, because it was all super claustrophobic and it was all done with it, and all the action in Children of Men was like that, like especially in the apartment
yeah
with the fucking baby,
very tight action
very much felt like this movie too.
When she went upstairs to finally give birth, mm-hmm. I did have flashes of Children of Men.
Yeah.
And yeah, there's that one scene where the only person, one of the military guys, I think it was a military guy, the only person who recognizes the situation in the moment,
and is like,
the
yo, pregnant
woman, I'm gonna save you.
I'm gonna save you.
Does his best.
He comes, he's like, all right, you stay here.
During an explosion.
Yeah, covers her during an explosion. You stay here, I'm gonna go check and see, and his head fucking pow right off.
The bottom of his face
yep.
blown off so violently. Like the one guy yeah. that stopped ends up dying. She sees a hole in the wall. She starts crawling over dead bodies to get to it, and it's at this point, it's like 10 minutes later,
yeah.
and it's oddly quiet. The poet shows up with the gas mask on.
Yeah.
He's like, no, come this way. They'll take her upstairs. That's when you see the refugee camp.
Yeah.
People walk around with like laundry baskets and shit.
Yeah.
They set this up so fast.
How did this?
Time is crazy in this.
It really is. So eons.
Much, yeah. Eons in her span of just a few, 20 minutes or whatever. And he takes her and he's taking her upstairs. He has to like... He sealed up the study from when they broke. We skipped that whole part where they broke the previous crystal. That was the beginning of the end. Is that like the forbidden fruit? That's the forbidden fruit, right? They weren't supposed to be in there. They played with it. They broke it. God, he bled into the stone. So that was a big turning point. And then shortly after that, they have sex, mm-hmm. right? That's a big thing.
Yeah.
Cain and Abel show up. So that the breaking of that as well as that. And then he sealed off the study. Garden of Eden. You're kicked mm-hmm. out of Garden of Eden. No one can go back in here. He kicks down the door, gets her in there, closes it off, becomes their bedchamber so that she can give birth to the Christ child.
Or the prophet.
The Messiah.
Whatever.
I guess it's a...
Son of God.
Messiah. We just call him Messiah.
Yeah.
That's fine. And Christ is very specifically Christian. Just saying the Messiah is another thing. The Jews and the Muslims are still waiting for the Messiah.
They are.
Guys, keep here. You're going to be waiting for a long fucking time.
So long.
And she gives birth, right?
Yeah.
It finally gets quiet out there.
Mm-hmm.
They bring gifts.
Yeah, I know exactly.
They brought us gifts.
They brought us gifts. Here, look, we have fruit and water. Yeah. And
another thing I found funny, every time anyone had a problem, the poet's answer was, let me get you some water.
Yeah,
he was giving everyone water.
Yep. Hey,
you need water.
You need some water.
Oh, you hit your head? Here's some water.
Here's some water.
Oh, you're dying?
Here's some water.
Get some food and water and clothes.
Holy water, bro.
It's the holy water. It's the, sprinkled on the forehead. Mm-hmm. And she's holding the baby. A little bit of breastfeeding action. And then he's like, let me hold the baby. And she's like, no.
She's like, fuck no. Well, because it's obvious, like,
what's gonna
from
happen?
What's been happening and how he feels and... The character that he's portraying.
And why he won't tell the people to go.
Yeah,
he already admitted at this point.
Exactly. At this point in time, he's already admitted that he doesn't want the people to go.
He loves their affection.
And it's also very apparent that he wants to show them the child.
Yes. Yes, he does. It is apparent. It's the whole point of it.
And she is like, you are... No.
No, this is...
You're crazy. They're crazy. You're not touching my baby.
Yeah.
And they're not touching my baby.
Which then starts like the 24-hour stare-off.
Yeah.
Where he just sits there and waits for her to fall asleep.
It doesn't even fucking blink.
Doesn't even blink. It's so weird. He blinked exactly one time. And she finally falls asleep.
And seriously, she is asleep for no more than probably about a tenth of a second.
Well, she blinks.
Yeah.
She like blinks, opens up her eyes. Baby's gone.
Baby's gone. Yep.
Baby's outside. Everyone's cheering. It's getting passed through the crowd.
No, he's coming out the
for
door.
A second.
He's holding her.
You
and
see it for a
and
second.
He looks at her. And the second she comes out the door... He just passes the baby off to the people.
Because then when she spins him around, the baby's gone. Baby's being crowd-surfed in its swaddled clothes.
Yep.
The clothes are coming apart. It's crying. It starts peeing on everyone as they keep passing it. And then, snap.
Yep.
Broken baby neck.
Broken baby neck.
Broken baby neck.
And then...
Isn't that commercial with that monkey?
And then within about 10 seconds of the baby's neck being broken... By the time
she rolls up on the funeral,
she rolls up not only on the funeral, but they are all eating her child.
She finally sees it on the altar. Quick shot of it completely just torn apart. Its guts are out.
Yep.
She turns around and they're all eating it.
They're all eating it. It's body and blood, man.
Body and blood. Is that Eucharist, yo? Mm-hmm. It died for their sins. All those sins that they already created.
Because they're so sorry, Chris.
They were so sorry for it.
Just
listen to the baby's voice can be heard in the crying of humanity,
yep.
right? And she's like, fuck that. Grabs a shard of glass and starts stabbing the shit out of people.
Which was awesome.
That was great. I was like, yes. That was the first moment she became a very she went from being reactive to proactive.
Yes, yeah. And it felt really good.
It did feel good. It felt good.
It felt great.
These people deserve it.
Yeah. And she, you know, she slaughtered a good probably 6, 7, 8 people.
She had a good amount of people before they finally ganged up on her and then started beating her the piss out of.
Oh my god.
That was an uncomfortable 10-15 seconds of her getting punched and kicked and yelled at.
No, and what really got me were the fucking boots to the head.
Yeah, they were just kicking her in the face. They were kicking her in the face and she got all fucked up. Potter runs and stop, what are you doing? And he's obviously upset, which then points to the, what I was saying, the Watchmaker God. The one who has no control of the people. He puts them in motion and he wants to influence them and he wants their love, but he can't.
He can't control them, though.
They have their free will and he can't control them, and they turned on what he loved the most, supposedly. Yeah. What he loves most is himself. The second thing he loved the most is home and his wife and all that stuff. Mm-hmm. And they turned on it and they destroyed it, but he's still like, we have to do the right thing.
Yeah.
And forgive them.
Uh-huh. And she is like, fuck.
You're crazy.
You're crazy. You're a bunch of assholes.
My baby's dead.
I know where there is a giant container of flammable liquid.
But the first thing that, right, so she, like we said earlier, every time she felt the house, the heart was contracting, and then finally she touches that, reaches out one more time, and it's dead.
A big old black heart.
It is dead. And then she screams, and like the house breaks apart under her, which was crazy.
Which is awesome.
And and then she runs downstairs because she knows where the oil is, and she pops the tank.
And it's all sitting there.
Gives him the rundown, like you're full of shit.
This is what you guys have done. This is why this is all happening. And now we're all going to fucking burn.
So it's a cleansing by fire.
Yeah.
The world has been cleaned. Everyone, regardless of who they are, whether they're praying or they were zealots or they were depraved, they all died. And then that's where then you get to, then they're like on the nose. He's fine carrying her burned body. She's like, straight up, who are you?
So what the fuck is going on here, because you should not have survived that.
and he's like, well, I am, which is, you know, an extension of I am.
Exactly.
That's what Yahweh means.
He's a creator. He admits that. He says he creates.
Yeah. And
I just need one more thing from you.
Yeah, you need one more thing? And she's like, I got nothing else. He's like,
you do. And then she's like, you know what? You can have it.
I need your love and your essence. And he takes it.
He literally digs into her chest and rips out her fucking heart.
And
it is.
And then it blackens up.
Yep.
And he
presses onto it.
And breaks open.
And on the inside is that fucking fire crystal that we saw at the beginning.
So the first woman, the foremother, it's her crystal. Now mother, it's new crystal. Mm-hmm. And then you got the new mother. Oh, I have no idea what.
Yeah, well, no, exactly. But then, you know, and then it's the first scene all over again. You see him take it and put it on the pedestal.
Yeah, almost exactly. I think he laughs at the end of the second one instead of the first one.
Yeah.
So it's not exactly the same, but it is pretty much exactly the same. And then
it all comes up. You see the house come back to normal.
The same series of shots. I was expecting Jennifer Lawrence to pop up.
Well, so was I. And then it was some other lady saying, baby. So it's, the cycle continues.
So that points to a reincarnation sort of thing. Well, so it goes into his stuff with the fountain where there's life and death.
Yeah.
The beginning is the end is the beginning.
Exactly.
So that's what's going on here, right? Yeah. Which is a very...
It is.
I actually see that as a very optimistic way of looking at this whole bullshit endeavor.
Well, yeah, because, I mean, at the end, he is trying again. Who knows? Maybe this time we won't fuck it up.
Maybe they'll get it right this time. Maybe he'll get it right this
time. Maybe.
That also falls perfectly under simulation theory. They just hit reset on the game. Mm-hmm. Restart the game.
And let's try this again.
Maybe this time I'll pick a new player. I'll be Ken instead of Ryu.
Yeah, exactly.
Right? No. One life. I got one continue. No, I found the key. I got two continues.
I get all the continues.
All the continues. That stretch of like 15 minutes, I feel like it was 15-20 minutes. I wouldn't be surprised if it was only like 8. But the real chaos when it all goes
crazy.
Yeah, when the people
start, all the people start showing up, and like you said,
from the thief to finally getting back into the Garden of Eden to give birth. That whole section is like the most intense 15-20 minutes of movie that I've seen in years.
It is, and there is so much going on.
It's wild.
Allegory-wise. And it's just like I'm trying... Like,
just trying to keep up with everything.
I'm still, like, racking around in my brain, like, the all things right, that happened. What the fuck was that, and what does that mean, and then this and that, and blah, 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 blah.
We didn't even touch on the whole, another direct analogy that's going on here is artists. You mentioned artists and creator and all that.
Yeah.
This is also surprisingly... What's the word I'm looking for? Like, it's Aronofsky very, in many ways, turning that microscope on himself.
Yeah.
And pointing out what he probably sees as some of his flaws in being a creator, a creator-muse relationship, and maybe giving too much of himself to his fans and not enough to his home life. Mm-hmm. I mean, someone put on Twitter a while ago that they will love a Blu-ray commentary track of this movie by Rachel Weisz, his ex-wife. Because what would she say about this movie?
Yeah,
and he insists that the movie has nothing to do with Rachel. Nothing to do with her whatsoever. But of course he would say that.
But of course he would say that.
But I mean, meanwhile, is it about him, though? It could be in many ways.
I have a feeling that it's a lot more about him. You know?
Than them,
sure. Per se.
Just his general relationship with his art and his fans and his personal life.
Well, and maybe, who knows, maybe this is, you know, from a perspective, you know, maybe he made Mother from the female perspective.
Yeah.
Because he was so distant, because maybe he was the Javier Bardem character for all intents and purposes.
Right.
You know?
Right.
And maybe getting this view is making him, you know,
trying to be.
Maybe it's his reset.
He's trying to heal himself.
Yeah.
Physician, heal thyself.
Exactly.
Right. And now him and Jennifer Lawrence are.
Go figure.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Now they're an item. Now she's the new muse. See how long that lasts. Good for him.
Well, maybe we'll get some awesome movies out of it.
Good for him. Yeah, I mean, maybe they'll work more together.
He made some great movies.
They did The Fountain together. It was fantastic.
And that was one of the best movies
I've the fountain.
Goddamn ever seen in my entire life.
But Mother, man. Mother is a wild, wild movie.
It is.
And I like it a lot.
The reason, and I find myself liking it more and more every day, and you want to know why? Mm. Because I'm continuing to think about it.
Because it's giving you something to think about.
If a goddamn movie is so complex that a week later, I'm still, like, racking my brain, like...
Still processing.
Fuck! Yeah. That's when, I mean... It's when you know it got you.
It worked. It did its job. Yeah. It did its job well.
And just in all reality, after seeing it, I mean, I completely agree with Anthony Jeselnik. Just the fact that it was even attempted is fucking amazing.
It's amazing. Paramount gave Aronofsky $30 million to make this movie, which is wild. No studio should have given anyone $30 million to make this movie. It's crazy that the people behind Paramount at the time, it was this guy, Brad Gray, who's not with them anymore. They have a new regime now. So it's actually amazing that they even put a decent marketing effort behind it. Because new bosses hate pimping the work of old bosses.
Yeah, but it's J-Law.
But it's J-Law, so they push for that. Still couldn't barely get to a $10 million opening weekend. It's like $7.58 million, something like that. And then the word of mouth is going to kill it. This thing will make less than $20 million in its entire theatrical run.
It will, but I guarantee you it's going to be like the centerpiece of some college professor's curriculum.
It'll be discussed for 10, 15, 20 years. In the future, I wonder if it'll, how much of a reappraisal it's going to get. Because it's just too different for people now.
Oh, yeah.
It needs to be like...
Digested.
Time. It needs to be set. Yeah. Apparently he wrote the screenplay... by himself, not something he normally does, because he has a writing partner. This guy's name is Ari Handel. He's also one of his co-producers at Protozoa. But he had a long weekend by himself where he was alone, and he just had all these ideas running through his head. It was a couple years ago, and he just sat down.
Cranked it out.
And he cranked it out. And it's rare for him, because he's the type of guy who will write a screenplay and then work on it for years before he's happy with it. So it's he took the Werner Herzog approach. That's how Herzog believes that a screenplay should not take more than 2 or 3 weeks to write.
Good job.
He's like,
I love you, Werner.
Yeah, but then that's how you end up with movies like My Brother, What Have You Done? And it's like, you know, you could have just...
You could have taken a little more time on that one, buddy.
You could have taken one more week to polish this thing. Just a little bit, Werner. Just a little bit. Man, what a wild, wild 2 hours of a movie, and that stretch, the elevation of everything is just...
It just ramps up so fucking quick.
I don't know. I can't think of any other director working right now who has that same kind of tonal capacity to really ramp things up such a way. No, outside of like a David Lynch, I would expect him to all of a sudden turn this into a House of Horrors where in every room you're leaping forward an eon.
Yeah, exactly. Right? Yeah, like a couple thousand years.
Wild.
Yeah.
Wild shit. It reminds me of episode 8 of the Twin Peaks. The Return is what's going on there. Drew, do you have your phone or whatever? I almost forgot to do this, but Ron wanted to send us his Mother review.
Okay.
And he missed it for our episode yesterday, for episode 245, because he got too drunk. So I forwarded you his email.
All right.
And let's read. We'll finish out. And he's got a bunch of questions here at the end, so we'll finish out with our hungry Ron's email.
All right, hang on. Let me get to this.
In the meanwhile, while Drew does that, everyone can let us know if you've seen Mother. Let us know what you think of it. You can tweet us at CrespoDiso or hit me up at I am Chris Crespo. I monitor both accounts. If you liked Mother, use the hashtag MotherLover. And if you don't like Mother, use the hashtag...
Mother hater.
I was going to say motherfucker.
But mother, okay. I mean, yeah. But you can love mother and fucker, too.
That's very spanking the monkey of you. Also, the hashtag motherfucker may get lumped in with a bunch of other hashtags, which may not other...
All right. It is entitled, Okay, This Shit Is Bananas.
Ron's email. Okay, this shit is bananas. Let's do it. Hey, yo, this shit is bananas.
So, when one goes to see Mother, you just don't see it. You process it.
Yes.
And that is the only way you can enjoy it. Mm-hmm. If you're going to see a movie and have a narrative that you can understand, that ain't this shit. When you get there is a series of events that you are privy to through the lens of J-Law, who, by the way, has a body that is on point, and I am now a fan of her more than her acting.
She did.
I mean, yeah, she was pretty much butt naked.
You could tell Aronofsky was in love with her, the way they shot it.
Oh, yeah.
Also, speaking of photography, shout out to Matthew Libatique, another amazing piece of cinematography for that guy. Whenever I think of cinematographers, I keep forgetting about Matthew Libatique.
He's good.
God bless Aronofsky for getting that guy work here.
But her acting is fantastic in this experience. Mm-hmm. I love how we never leave her side. We are with through it all, trying to figure out what the fuck.
Yep.
Because with the cinematography and sound design, we get clues to what's happening. Mm-hmm. With subtle sound and creaks of the old house, you get a sense of life of this home. Mm-hmm. Who I think is the body of J-Law? That heartburn medication fizz always ringing hollow. Michelle Pfeiffer is great in this showcase as well, but when the chaos breaks loose and Armageddon happens, I am left wondering, would this happen if a black chick was in love with the poet? Someone like Zazie Beetz.
Zazie Beetz!
I mean, not to get all ignorant and shit, but I was throwing my hands up in the theater saying, come on, white girl! I know when the bitches for the wait kept sitting on the sink, I would have grabbed a broom and smacked them away.
I think that says more about your mother, Ron, as opposed to this mother, but all right, go ahead.
Beside that...
My mom would have thrown a chink like this.
Beside that, what you get from this endeavor is demonstrating the power of influence and devotion. Mm. I think that's what this is about.
Absolutely.
How we crave influence others in an effort to garnish devotion and admiration, which is the purest form of love, I guess. Mm-hmm. More pure than family and blood, because not ingrained in use, it is brought upon by substance of your being, not by how you are connected with one another.
So he's saying if you love someone just through love of their work, it's almost more of a pure love than loving someone just because...
blood tells you. Because somebody told you to love that person because you're related.
Sure. Okay.
So with that, I have some questions for you.
All right.
Did the director read The Dark Tower? Because I know how it was ending because of that book.
The beginning is the end is the beginning. I wouldn't be surprised if Aronofsky is a Stephen King fan.
I wouldn't be surprised either, but knowing, you know, but I would, both of them, they're both obviously fans of the religious traditions.
Yes, I think they both grew up religious.
Classic stories.
In religion, yes. Yeah. I think I'm pretty sure Stephen King grew up in a religious family, and... yeah, I think they're just pulling from the same religious inspiration.
Yeah. What part frustrated you the most?
The audience response.
I mean, yeah.
Yeah.
Nobody
because nothing in the movie really frustrated me. Yeah. I was with it. I was along for the ride. When Kristen Wiig started blowing people's heads off, I was like, yes!
That was awesome.
And then she was
out
like,
of nowhere. When she, yeah. she's got two pistols. She's just going down 2, 4, 6, 8, 10 people. All yeah. right. And kill her too.
Hands the gun off to get a load. Hey, inspiration. Where have you been hiding? Kill her. And then the explosion, boom, blows her up.
Yeah.
When that explosion happened, I was like, what? There were multiple times during that stretch where I got the arm, the hairs on my standing up yeah. sensation. Yeah. Where I was just like, I got such a visceral reaction to the images that was happening.
What frustrated me the most, probably the lack of Gleason after the beginning.
It is frustrating when you get a bit of Domino
and then he leaves.
You want more frustrating? It wouldn't fit with the rest of the movie, but when Michelle Pfeiffer's character leaves, when she walks off and you never see her again, no. I missed her because she was great. The character is a lot of fun. And there was the only bit of humor or camp at all in the movie
was her.
Involves her and yeah. Ed Harris and their interaction in the beginning. Her lemonade and all mm-hmm. the yellow panties. Yeah. That was the only bit of fun. If it wasn't for that part of the movie, this thing could have been not a slog, but like dour.
Oh,
too cynical and nihilistic. But that helped elevate a little bit. So I would have liked more Michelle Pfeiffer. How about that?
What made you fall in love or hate this movie?
The style of it, the ballsiness of it, what it's saying, what it's trying to do.
I have found that I love just about anything Darren Aronofsky puts to film.
At this point, yeah. I don't love Noah. There are parts that I love. I love his recreation of the Genesis story.
I do,
When Noah tells a story to the kids. I love the way it looks. I love some of the designs. The movie as a whole, I do not love.
I think he should have kept it just as the graphic novel and not turned this one into film as opposed sure. to what he did with The Fountain where he...
Graphic novel, then
finally made it into a film.
Sure, he should have just left it as a novel.
I think
rock monsters would have worked better conceptually that way instead of seeing them in motion.
I have it upstairs.
Yeah.
It works better as a comic than it does movie.
There was one shot of that rock monster leading the family and it's... The fountain style shot yeah. where it's the big starry background and you see their silhouettes.
Yeah.
And I was like, that's a great shot. But otherwise, I don't know. I don't love that one. But then again, I don't not like it.
Yeah.
So.
I mean, anything the man puts to film, I'm down for.
Yeah, I think that's a big caveat. I try to say that too, right? With like the Coen brothers, I'm a mark for them. Fincher, I'm a mark. Mm-hmm. P.T. Anderson, I'm a mark. Yeah. So I'm prone to like their stuff more than others yeah. and to go with it more. So,
but at the same time,
a grain of salt.
At the same time, though, if it's fucking garbage, it's still garbage.
If it's garbage, yeah, it's hard. If it's a Once Upon a Time in Mexico.
Exactly.
I love Robert Rodriguez.
But good Lord, buddy.
That was some shit. That was some shit.
So, who is the poet?
The creator. He says it. I am.
He
I.
says.
He's God.
He says. He does. He says, I am I create. I.
Yeah. He says exactly who yeah. he is in the movie, but he's also... Like we said, he's also
yes.
Darren Aronofsky. He's also, the artist in general as in relation to the consumer. He's also the negligent husband, the ignorant uh-huh. husband, if you want to look at it as literally as you can. You can watch this movie literally up until a certain point. And then after a while, that all falls apart.
Yeah.
And those are people who think the movie's trash. We're like, this movie stopped making sense. Like, no, it only started making sense.
Yeah.
That's only when it started.
No, that is when I got it.
Yes, that's when it clicked.
I was like, oh, God damn it. Son of a bitch.
That's when the movie went from being terrifying to almost hysterical. Yeah. I was like, I can't believe this is happening.
Exactly. Who is the movie for? Everyone.
Everyone. Boom.
It is.
It's not for. I know what Ron's asking. I would like to think that everyone would get something out of it if they really watch it with an open mind and open heart. But I think Aronofsky, who he made this for, he made this for people who want something new and interesting and different. He made this for people who are tired of Spider-Man movies.
Yeah.
For people who don't go to see Marvel movies. He made it for people who... the people who complain that Hollywood is out of original ideas. Next time someone tells me Hollywood is out of original idea, I'm going to ask them, did you see Mother? No? Go fuck yourself. Because you do not know what you're talking about.
Yeah.
Original movies bomb all the time because then people see this original idea like, and they're like, that looks stupid. I don't want to see it. There's no stars or wars in it.
Well, then it wouldn't be original now, would it?
Goddamn, audiences are terrible.
How would you make it better?
Shoot it on film. Because it was digital.
So that's really it.
Shoot it on film. Give them an extra $20 million to smooth out the digital effects just a little bit more. I don't know. I like the movie the way it is.
No, exactly. I mean, I like the...
Right?
You know, spend a couple extra $100,000 on that digital fire, buddy.
Yeah.
I would have rather... Or you know what? Cut the budget in half and you should have done a real fire.
Just burn the house. Yeah, so like the end when the house explodes.
Yeah.
Yeah, it looked digital. You know, yeah. So what are you going to do? And in 10 years, it's going to look worse.
It is.
But by that point, I was just all in. I was all in the story anyway. Yeah, no, so a little bit of digital wonkery wasn't going to break the movie.
I was so into the movie that I didn't notice there was no soundtrack.
No music whatsoever, except for the club scene. No music whatsoever. Shocking.
I didn't even know. You had to point it out at the end, and I was like, holy fuck, you're right.
There was no music.
That's how into it I was. I was just in.
Just into it. You just sucked into the story. It wasn't even like it wasn't even tones or anything. Like No Country for Old Men gave you tones.
Yeah.
As opposed to music. They didn't even go with tones. They just like, man, wild stuff. That's the end of the email?
Yes.
Thanks, Ron. I appreciate that. Ron mentioned something also that I wanted to say earlier and I forgot. What did he call it? The heartburn medication fizz.
Yes.
Which is funny. That's a funny way to... She was always like touching her sternum.
She was.
When she was... Maybe it was heartburn. She threw that stuff away after she said she was pregnant.
Correct.
And he... But it was before he wrote the poem or after?
Yes.
Just after she said he was pregnant, she threw it away. So I'm thinking that's the Old Testament, New Testament split.
Could be.
Right. No. Change. It's a changing of what's going on. It's the only thing that really changed between the first half and second half with her, because all of a sudden she doesn't need it anymore. And when she threw it away, I was like, oh, is that a smart move? Is she going to need that later? I'm like, nope, she didn't.
Well, that's...
She didn't need it.
Yeah.
No. So, that's why.
She probably could have used it there at the end. She probably would have been fucking snorting that shit if she could at the end. Put it on her fucking...
Just dripping,
damn it.
Dripping yellow out of her nose.
Yeah.
That, as everything's falling apart around her. Man, what a wild movie. All right, well, there you go. This is has been our longest spoiler bonus episode on any one movie by far.
Well, I mean...
Because they're usually half an hour long, and this has been a full hour.
I mean, if... I'm sure if we ever tried to explain upstream color with our mouth words, then it would probably be just as long, if not longer.
No, if we did upstream color in the moment after we saw the movie...
it would have actually...
I've had enough time to digest it.
That would have been about 10 minutes. Directly after the movie, I would have been like, I have no idea what the fuck happened.
I need to watch it again.
I need to watch it like another two, maybe three times.
That's true.
And talk to a bunch of people about it.
That's true. yeah, I think I've digested enough and written about it enough now that I can... I think I could do a spoiler. I think so. I'm not going to try. Maybe. Well, we can do a... when Shane Carruth finally puts out his third movie, this Merchant on the Seas movie that he's been making for a minute now.
Okay. I mean, I'm in.
We'll go back and rewatch Primer and Upstream Color and episodes on them.
Between Primer and Upstream Color, I mean...
That'd be sweet. All right, Drew. Where can people find you online?
At Antihero419 all over the motherfucking internet.
That's right. And remember, hit me up on Twitter at IamChrisCrespo with those hashtags. And join our Facebook group, Cinema Crespediso, and email us, cinemacrespediso@gmail.com. And we are out of here.